Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Lou Trek Show. Show number 18 for Monday, August 17, 2009.
Now establishing data link. Accessing.
And now, two people who go together like Stephen Hawking and karaoke night.
Ha ha, very funny.
Your host, Lou Costanzo and Brian Dettamore.
Prepare ship for light speed.
No, light speed is too slow.
Light speed too slow?
Yes, we're going to have to go right to ludicrous speed.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Lou Trek Show. I am your host, Lou.
And I'm your host, Brian Dettamore.
And we thank you very much for joining the Lou Trek Show and downloading tonight's show. Our main website is
www.loutrekshow.com. That is LOUTREKSHOW.com.
Yes, and you can send us topic suggestions as well as questions and comments. Our email address is
LoutrekShow. That's LOUTREKSHOW.gmail.com.
Or if you want to really send the email, send it to the correct email address, which is loutrekshow@gmail.com. That's okay, Brian. That's okay, Brian. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at loutrekshow.com/Twitter. And if you want to talk to us on Skype or send us a voicemail on Skype, plug in what, Brian?
Oh, you'll have to do that one, Bub. I don't know that one.
Oh, he fails. After these many episodes, he fails. All right. Well, then, it's Lou Trek Show on Skype as well. But the phone number, he's not going to remember it. He barely knows it. Is area code 630-WWW-TREK, T-R-E-K. That's 630-WWW-TREK or 999-8735 for those who like the numbers. So, Brian. Well,
yes.
How are you doing today, bud?
I'm doing fine. I'm fat and sassy, ready to rock and roll, baby.
All right. Well, I guess I'm fat
forgot
and sassy,
forgot my guitar
too.
Part.
Oh, sorry. Maybe I should find a guitar sound effect and just toss it in.
Nah, I will.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to have to give credit where credit is due again. I heard this on GoDaddy again. I don't know. I love listening to Radio GoDaddy, and unfortunately, I'm hacking them big time. Not hacking. I'm sorry. I don't want to go to prison. But I mean,
that's a bad word to use, Bubba.
Yeah, it's a bad word to use. But, oh, they had a sound effect that said, "And now, two people who go together like Stephen Hawking and karaoke night." And then, yeah. Ha ha, very funny. I heard that and I died for 20 minutes. I had to pause their podcast and just laugh for 20 minutes to get that out of my system.
We'll have to do one. Mr. Costanza, go to Absolute Warp.
Oh, yeah, right. Something like that. Okay, well, for this episode of the Lou Trek Show, we're going to be doing our review of
the first season of DS9. Yay!
Also known as Deep Space Nine. That sounds like
And for you all poor people, this is where we get to have a space station set in the middle of nowhere and create a series from it instead of having a constantly moving ship.
Yes. But, you know, we've been on a ship enough. Jeez, we got to, you know, because like they said when they were in the, I don't know what they're called. They're like little journals that are on the DVD. The reason, one of the things they found when they kept it at the space station is that they could spend more money, get more aliens, get more people in on it. And so they have, you know, so many secondary characters, more than any starship ever had, so this is great. That's what's good about it. And of course, it just was so close to the wormhole they could sniff it. I mean, I heard Sisko going, "Major, what is that smell?" Neutrinos. Yeah, it's neutrinos, but I don't know where they're coming from. So anyway, we're gonna start this one with the Emissary. Is it also known as Ben Sisko. But episode 1 was The Emissary Part 1 on Stardate 46379.1, originally air date of January 3rd, 1993. A new crew is assigned to a former Cardassian space station, and boy does it look like it. Deep Space Nine. In a joint Federation Bajoran farce. Oh, it says force, but I said farce. With Commander Sisko in charge, but just barely. But his life is dramatically changed when he is declared the emissary to the prophets by a Bajoran priest. Now, why would the Bajorans call their gods prophets and not the Ferengi call them prophets? That's one thing.
Who knows?
Yes, they should have thought about that one. Rename the wormhole aliens something else while the Ferengi worship the prophets. It only makes sense.
Why would the Ferengi worship the prophets?
Because they all live for profit. And now it may be spelled differently. It certainly has a different meaning. But you could play this. You could play this double entendre thing with the prophets. I worship the prophets. Yes.
I've never seen a prophet god.
And I've never seen a prophet god so stupid either. Did you notice that about the prophets? Whenever Benjamin goes into his little psychedelic thing and all the people are around him that he knows and they're, air? What is air? We don't understand air.
Time. Well, they don't understand air because they're energies. They're an energy. They're basically, they don't have concepts of body. So they don't have the concept of breathing.
No.
Okay, just like they don't have the concept of love, hate,
time,
fear,
hatred.
I mean, they're emotionless. They don't understand these things, so that's part of the reason why they needed Benjamin Sisko to teach them this stupid stuff.
Yes. Yes, you are correct. So, and of course, you know, we start off with Sisko at
Wolf 359.
Okay, I'm losing my mind. Okay, I quit.
Hey, we're both losing our mind. What can I say?
3579. I'm just thinking of 7 of 9. Oh. Anyway, so we're at Wolf 359, and those were some pretty darn good fight sequences, I thought. Especially, even when the escape pod blasted away from the ship. That was pretty nifty the way they did that. I know most people didn't really notice that. And then, of course, he slowly turns his head to look at it as it explodes. Ooh, didn't
losing
you...
Losing his wife.
Uh-huh. Didn't you go, oh, no. And then we flash forward 3 years, was it?
I think so.
Yep, to his meeting with Picard. And I could tell every time somebody said, Commander, Captain Picard is still waiting for you. Oh, yeah? Oh, okay. Thank you. I thought he was going to send Worf after him.
That would have been an interesting fight.
Yes. Get him in here, Lieutenant. Gluttonly, sir. Anyway, but you could probably do Worf's voice better than I can. So...
I will retrieve him for you, Captain.
Yes. And if he resists, I don't care. Kill him. Stun him.
Resistance is futile.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Picard's resistance.
And yeah, did you hear the discussion? They had a pretty good heated discussion about whether or not Sisko wanted this job or not.
Yeah.
And in the captain's ready room. And it was because Sisko really was at the point where he's just ready to give it all up.
Yes.
Just because he felt so bad about the loss of his wife.
Yeah.
And he spent several years from what... Down the line, you'll know that he was spending time in shipyards, hiding himself away. In fact, while he was in the shipyards, he actually designed the what we will know as the Defiant.
Yeah.
During those 3 years' time, and this job that come up was something that I think the Cardassians wanted him to come. That's why they ordered him to go.
Huh. Yeah, the Defiant. She's small, but she's got teeth. So, yeah.
The Kai was a very persuasive woman.
I liked her.
Yeah, so did I. I was ashamed they killed her off.
Yes.
early in the series, because I think if she would have been around a lot longer, a lot of the BS that went on.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't keep a Kai after that. Every time they make a new Kai, that Kai had to quit.
Kai Opaka, she was the best Kai. She had a lot of. You should see the deleted scenes, the blooper reel with her in it. It was pretty funny. But see, now I know we're going off into season two here, but this Vedic win or soon to be Kai win, man. Kids, close your ears, okay? Thanks. Count to five. Ready? One. She was a bitch!
Amen.
There you go, kids. Okay, you can listen now. Well, the problem here is she's doing all this backstabbing crap and saying, child, it's for the prophets. The prophets are smiling on you. Of course they're smiling on you. They're feeling sorry for the poor people. Anyway. But that's in a different
season.
But
this is a chance. And see, they brought Miles O'Brien from the Enterprise in to give him another name. Give him somebody people recognized from the TNG, Star Trek The Next Gen. They brought Miles in to play engineering chief here.
Yep.
I like who they picked as Kira Nerys for this, because she used to do shows in the Heat of the Night, and she was very good in that too. And so when they picked her for that, that was like, wow, I know her. It had recognition. And then of course we had our Benson add on with Odo.
But then
we had Quark. Quark and his family. Quark and his crew.
See, I have a hard time saying his name too. I'm sure it's like Quark. Yeah, exactly. Quark. It ain't quirk. It's not a quirk of nature. It's Quark.
Quark. That evil look.
Yeah. Well, okay. And then we have.
I heard you, hon. But then we had Jadzia Dax. Which gave Sisko somebody to talk with. You know what I mean? Somebody that he could relate to, because he's got Odo, which he has no idea what he's dealing with. Quark, which is going to drive him nuts throughout the show. He's got a enlisted man as his chief of engineering.
Yes.
He's got a Bajoran terrorist as a first officer.
Mm-hmm.
He's got he's got a bioengineered medical officer.
Yep.
I mean, he's got so many wild characters on his crew, and he hasn't even had a chance to even throw his first pitch yet.
Yeah, no kidding. That's true. That's a good analogy there.
I mean, so here he is, and he's tossed into this rinky-dink, half-built, half-put-together space station that the Cardassians is basically stripped out of nothing. And it was a mining facility. It was a mining station. It wasn't like a space hub like it ended up becoming down the line. It was a mining platform, basically.
Where did they get all the ore? Where did they get it all? Did ships bring it in and ships ship it out?
Right. That's all they did. That's all they did there. It was a forced labor camp, which Gul Dukat ran,
or Gul Maset, whichever you want to call him.
But it was like, okay, this is going to sound interesting.
Yeah, you got that reference, didn't you, Gul Maset?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was Gul Maset in TNG, and then he was Gul Dukat in DS9, of course. He was only in one episode, or was he in two episodes of TNG? I think it was two, but of course, you know, he was in multiple episodes of DS9, so... Okay, well, in the series, in the episode I just told you about, they hadn't found the wormhole yet, so let's go on to the second episode.
Sisko and Dax are exploring this wild wormhole. Benjamin Sisko having an acid trip. Because that's basically what it is, because everyone in his life is tossed in here in one lump sum shot, trying to explain all this to him, in a way that he can understand, because they're so highly evolved, they don't know how to talk to something that's inferior to them. So they had to basically take shapes and forms that he could recognize, that he could interact with. So, yeah, it's like a big acid trip for him.
Okay, here's a question then for you. They had to use people in his life to relate to him. How did they know these people?
So they took them out of his memories.
So if they took them out of his memory, couldn't they have just extracted the information they wanted as well?
They could have.
But then again, the show wouldn't have been as good if they did that.
Right. That's the whole point.
And it says here, the Bajoran wormhole created by the prophets is found, and a crisis with the Cardassians ensues. When did the crisis with the Cardassian ever end?
I think the Cardassians were trying to get through the wormhole.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
And they had went through the wormhole but couldn't come back out.
Yeah.
And they were trying to, if I remember right, they in the second part of this, they actually moved the base close to the wormhole to kind of defend it.
Yeah. Yes, they did.
Like, no, it was in an area of space that couldn't be claimed yet, and the Cardassians were claiming it's theirs, and it was actually still in Bajoran space.
Correct. Yes.
So by putting DS9 there, that made it Bajoran control.
Yeah.
Okay, and the Cardassians couldn't get it, because if the Cardassians had had it, then the Cardassians would have built a space station there, and they would have had control of that world.
You know what they should have done was given the space to the Federation. Because it's amazing how many races violated Bajoran space.
Well, no, they traded at the Bajoran station. That's how come Bajoran got money, was because everything came in and out came in through DS9 first and then went out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's how come having DS9 right there was a good idea, because DS9, number one, was a protection. They could beef up the protection of the space station to defend, but it also was a transient spot.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Gotcha.
To set up and get ready to go into the wormhole or come out of the wormhole, dock there, drop off stuff, and then go out to wherever they were going.
Yeah.
It was one of those nice... It's like a major hub, like a major harbor on like a coastal city.
Yeah.
Okay. Everything ran through there. Like in the early 1700s of America, where Boston, New York, Charleston, South Carolina were all major harbors. Everything came in and out of those harbors. That's what DS9 became for the Bajorans. It became a major trading center for them. It made them money, made them lots of money, because everyone came to DS9 and traded.
Yeah.
Quark, God knows how much Quark actually made hand over fist
I don't know. Something tells me that he's probably the only Ferengi that never really made a good living. He chased it, but he never really got it. And I don't think that measly bar really got him much. I think
that bar got him more than what everyone thinks, because he hid a lot of his ass.
Probably, yeah. That's probably
even when they
true.
Wiped everything out on him, he still turned back around and made a profit. Just because everybody brought stuff for him back to make his bar functional again.
Yes. Okay, well, let's go on to episode number 3, which you may enjoy because there are some of your people that are in there. It's called Past Prologue. A Bajoran terrorist with ties to Kira arrives on Deep Space Nine. However, he is pursued by the Bloody Cardies. I don't mind saying that. They're not a real race, so I'm not really a racist, am I? Bloody Cardies. Fish heads. Anyway, it's getting worse. Now, in this one here says, the crew of Deep Space Nine rescue Bajoran Tana Los, or is it Los? Tana Los, from his failing vessel that is being attacked by the Cardassians. The Cardassians state that Tana is a known member of the terrorist organization, the Koma, and request his return, but Atana attempts to gain political asylum, which, of course, Commander Sisko says, "Hey, you got it, buddy." Granted. Later, Odo spots Tana with the Duras sisters, Lursa and Bator, making covert discussions. Honor, honor, Batoran. Honor, honor, freedom.
I'm glad those heifers finally died.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so anyway, what'd you think of this one?
I guess they were trying to get everything settled out.
This was kind of lame, if you ask me.
Yeah, it was just it was one of those filler.
Yes, the writing staff was saying, "Good God, guys, what are we gonna do this week? I don't know. Why don't we get
Let's do something about Bajorans."
Yes, Bajorans. Oh, hey, there's a thought. How about Bajorans? How about Cardassians? Okay, come on, give me more. How about Klingons? Klingons. How about Klingon babes? There's no such thing. Well, then we get the next best thing.
Klingon, get the Duras sisters.
Get the Duras sisters. Man. I wonder if they dream at night about how to dishonor themselves.
Oh, I bet you they like to dishonor themselves in more ways than we could ever count.
Oh, yeah. You know who I'd like to put in a ring together would actually be the Duras sisters and Kai Wynn.
Kai Wynn, it would be a match. Kai Wynn would get her butt handed to her.
Well, of course she would. But, I mean, as far as underhanded, sneaky tricks, the Duras sisters and Kai Wynn, the prophets are smiling at me, child. Oh, yeah? Patah! The prophets don't want you to hurt me, child. Oh, yeah? Here's to the prophets. Yeah. Here's a pain stick for the prophets.
Give me a pain stick to the prophets.
Yeah. All right.
Like I said, I'm glad those two are dead. Have to never look at them again.
All right, well, let's go on to number four.
But the breasts were interesting.
Yeah. Oh, you couldn't avoid them.
I just didn't like the way they had that look that you just had to slap them silly.
Well, they'd enjoy that. But anyway, let's go on to number four.
A man alone.
Odo is accused of the murder of a Bajoran murderer. If you're a murderer of a murderer, does that make you a murderer?
Yep.
No, it doesn't. It makes you justice.
Is it justice? Is murder's never justice?
Yes, but here's the deal. He was accused of murdering a guy who ended up finding out the guy was actually the clone. And guess who killed the clone?
Odo.
Nope. You don't remember this?
No, actually, I don't.
Okay, yeah. Odo has a livid hatred for this guy. I think he may have even been a Bajoran. And he sees him in Quark's one day. "You've got 26 hours to get off this space station." And, of course, the guy goes up to Quark's. He's getting a nice back rub when all of a sudden the sexy woman gets pushed aside and a knife gets put in the guy's back. And so the investigation that Odo starts to lead, even though he's the prime suspect, he leads the investigation until he's relieved of duty. And then he continues the investigation, only to find out that the guy actually was a clone. So the guy made a clone of himself, and then he killed his clone to
frame
Odo. Because think about it, there was only one set of DNA. The girl was actually a holographic image, so she has no DNA. Odo has no DNA. Except for when he went in to investigate the crime scene, so he left his DNA there. So the only DNA there is actually Odo's and the guy's. So he can kill his own clone, and there'll be no DNA evidence left behind. Now that, damn, that's impressive.
Tell me about it. You have to go all that way to kill accuse somebody? That's bad.
Yeah, it gets pretty bad. Well, I mean, you know, Finney did the same thing.
This is one of those... it sounds like to me this is one of those nice, hey, let's create a murder mystery.
Yes, that's what it is. And why not make the guy who's going to investigate the murder the prime suspect? So that was A Man Alone. How about number 5, Babel?
Babel.
A mysterious virus plagues the station, causing speech distortions, and eventually, no one died. What are they talking about? Do you remember anyone dying?
I can't remember no one dying, but it's been a long time since some of these, it's been a while. Like the next one I know really well because it was all Miles O'Keefe.
Yes.
On that one.
Mm-hmm. Desk the Box O' Cup.
I mean, Chief O'Brien, I mean, just having one of those fun episode thingies. But this one is like...
Broom the fax machine on mouse! And, of course, you know, everybody was like, what? Oh, dude, this ain't funny.
What are you talking about?
Yes, aphasia. I'm surprised they didn't toss the thing word salad out. I've heard that before. Word salad. But, no, it was aphasia. And so they had to go to a... They had to send Kira to go kidnap a scientist and bring him back. And he says, I'm not going to help you. And she says, oh, well, guess what? By the way, I'm affected, and you're affected, too. So she takes him to Deep Space Nine, and he solves the problem. But I don't remember anyone dying. It would eventually... How would it lead to death, though? I don't remember that part.
It was, according to this, it was a someone had caused a replicator to mutate the disease.
Yes. Yes.
Guy who created it had died in prison, and his assistant...
Yeah, that's who she had to kidnap, was his assistant.
But what was funny is Quark and Odo has to work together for the first time. now, those two, they both hate each other.
Oh, yeah.
With a passion. Oh, now, they have to work together. Now, that's... And as we go along through the series where they actually have to work together more than once, this love-hate relationship they have with each other is typical of what's going to be the whole Odo-Quark scenario throughout the whole series of Quark. It's like a chess game with Quark and Odo. It's back and forth, back and forth, back and forth of what they're going to try to do to each other or what they do to each other. Oh, and then when they're forced to have to work together, it's like, I don't want to do this, but we got to.
That was worth a few bars of gold press platinum. Okay, number 6.
Now, number 6 was the fun one. I like this one.
And this was Captive Pursuit. O'Brien befriends.
Tosk.
An alien from the Gamma Quadrant who has been bred to be hunted.
Yeah, and this is funny because the hunters definitely was definitely more powerful than the Federation was, obviously. Yeah. And they just basically hunted this guy, and it was fun to watch Chief O'Brien help him get away from them. Mm-hmm. The whole purpose of this warrior society was to hunt his race down. They bred him to be the ultimate escape artist, the ultimate prey, and to hunt him down for long periods of time. He was bred to do this. The longer he lived, the more honor he brought to his family.
Yes.
Okay. So, but the Federation couldn't figure out the concept of this. To them, it was barbaric.
Yeah.
Okay, here's where the prime directive comes in. Okay, how do you define the prime directive? This is where captains usually have leeways to make decisions. Sometimes captains make the wrong decision. And here Sisko did. Sisko should have let him go and let him be who he is.
Yep.
Okay, and not interfered, but the way the people were conveying their intentions, he was a captive and needed to be caught and needed to be held and brought in be killed. Yes. Well, they really didn't want to kill him.
Nope, stop. They weren't going to kill him. They were going to put him on public display.
Well, which is worst thing they could have done for
you. Yeah, I would have rather
okay, died. Because that would have made brought dishonor to his race. It's one of those things that, again, the Prime Directive was set up for. Let them do what they want to do. This is this is the way their culture is. Whether we agree with it or not is irrelevant.
But not on my space station. Okay, well, we should go on.
Well, I would have let it go. Once I figured out what it was, I would have let it go and hell bent to the Admiralty Board.
Well, that's the thing. And if I remember correctly in this one, Odo was going to go after him because O'Brien was helping the guy escape. And Odo started heading for the turbo lift when Sisko stopped and said, "There's no hurry." Remember? So in a sense, he let him go. And of course, he had to chastise him after that. You know, "Don't you ever do it again. Good job." Anyway.
Yeah.
So, number 7.
Oh, God, here we go. Favorite pain in the ass.
There we go. See, we said that at the same time. This is good. Q-less. Q and Vosh arrive on Deep Space 9. That says it right there. However, Vosh has realized the annoyance of Q and wants him to leave her alone. Well, gee, no kidding.
How you put a restraining order on a Q?
You don't. You just ask very nicely, "Would you please leave me alone?" But you need me. Oh, geez, what a freak. And of course...
Well, you got to keep in mind, you have to remember the episode that created this scenario in the first place. Yeah. What did Picard make Q promise?
That he would watch her, protect her. Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
So what is Q going to do?
He certainly ain't going to follow through on a promise to Picard.
Hell no, they've got too much of a rapport with each other.
Yeah,
he's not going to break that.
I loved it when O'Brien walks in and Q's there, and Q just walks past him, because obviously O'Brien was one of the little people on Enterprise.
Yeah.
And O'Brien turns his head. I laughed when he said, "Bloody hell." Bloody hell. It was great. Then he goes up and tells, you know, Sisko, "We've got a problem. Everybody knows about Q. Everyone knows about Q. Even Captain Janeway found out about Q."
Everyone had their hand in Q's butt somewhere.
Yes. And of course, you know, Vosh was trying to get some profit off of some things, including one that was destroying the space station, you know, guiding it toward the wormhole because it had something that belonged in the wormhole. And of course, you know, it almost destroyed them until they came running in with their phasers and blasted the thing. And she said, "Oh, wait, what about my latinum?" Well, I guess you ain't spending. Oh, they're off there doing their auction while the space station is hurtling toward its destruction. So, anyway, how about Dax, number 8?
Yeah, this one was a toughie. I mean, mm-hmm. You go in, you get right off the bat, you get Dax kidnapped. Okay, you don't
almost
wanna...
kidnapped. Yep, they almost got her off the station.
Yeah,
they tried their best. They came very close until and they did get her off the station until they got hit.
I
couldn't believe
they were trying to prosecute the trail.
Yeah, yes, but I couldn't believe
a crime. But you can't. It all comes back as it's a kind of resemblance of King Solomon's decision to split the baby in half. How do you split a trill from its host without killing the host?
You don't.
Okay, Jadzia didn't commit the crime. Curzon did the crime. Blaming, now they're trying to get the Dax symbiote to take the fall for it.
Yes.
You just can't do it. I mean, it is a perfect crime.
This is interesting, though. These guys were able to humble every defense system on the space station, get her off the space station into their ship, and then take off from the space station, but get stopped by a tractor beam. Didn't they see that coming? I would have.
They never figured that they'd be able to see him, because I think they took out the sensors, didn't they?
Yes. So it's like, it's interesting how they got so many things. But, of course, she's going to, you know, John Z is going to defend herself. I didn't do it. I didn't know. She's not. She ain't going to defend herself at all. Hey, if they kill me, that's just the way it is, Ben. Damn it, Jax. Trying to save your life. I can't do his voice. I've tried for years. I can't do it. And it turns out that, you know, of course, Curzon Dax was sleeping with the man, the dead man's wife. Now, I'm trying to think. Who was it that ended up killing the guy? It wasn't Dax.
It wasn't Dax. It was somebody else.
All right. Well, yeah. A couple other things I want to mention about that is they had an arbiter on there who wanted to be there till the end of the week, not senility. Remember that? Was she a nut job or what?
It must apparently was, because I don't remember.
Oh, it's Anna Haney as Judge Renora.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Annie Haney. Yeah, she's definitely strained. Oh, she died on May 26, 2001. Died in her home in Studio City, California, following a massive heart attack. Feel bad. I mean, she was a darn good actress. I liked her as an actor, but in that episode, she was just too damn stiff.
I mean, maybe that's the way they wrote her.
Yeah, that's the way they wrote her, and that's the way she played it. You know, she had to be a jerk. But that's not really her. She also, she was on Mrs. Doubtfire. She was the social worker.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now I remember.
Now you remember. Yeah. She was good there. She was funny. But okay, let's go on. And of course, it turns out that, you know, Curzon didn't do it. It was actually the other side, because Curzon was in, you know, the dead man's wife's bed at the time, as the dead man was giving out the defense codes, kind of like a Moog and Duras, House of Duras thing here. That's what it sounded like to me, right?
Yep, that's exactly what it was.
Yep, same
God,
thing.
I hate that name too. Duras.
Yeah, I know. He brings shame to you people. All right, number 9. We have The Passenger.
The Passenger.
A sinister criminal is hiding in the mind of someone on Deep Space Nine, but Bashir struggles to understand how it works. He struggles hard because he's the one that the guy is inhabiting.
It was funny to watch the guy, the person that was hunting him all this time, finally said, I think it was a female, wasn't it? Yeah. No, it was the guy, James Harper.
Yeah.
Just, I got him. Gone.
No, it was
don't
a female.
Don't worry about him anymore.
No, it was a female because, I remember she was so... he's not dead. Well, look, his body's right here. No, he's not. Look, it's right here. And then she stabs the corpse and says, but I'm still not convinced he's dead. But, of course, you know, they finally got him out of...
Caitlin Brown, that's who was the was the police officer hunting him down.
I liked her. She was good. She's thorough, you know. I'd love to stab some guy who's a killer on my planet. Okay, so anyway, would they get the guy out, the consciousness, they send him off into space, kill... Oh, no, I remember they put him in the little disc, the little blinky-like disc, and she says, all right, now, is he in my custody now? To which Sisko says, yep, sure is, take him off. And she says, no, thanks, pulls out a phaser, psh, dead.
Ain't coming back, don't even worry about it.
Ain't gonna do no more. And of course she walks out there thinking, well, my job is done, I guess I can retire now. Because that's the only thing she had that she had to do was to hunt him down. So anyway.
She did it.
Number 10.
This was funny. This was a running gag from
Move
from
along
Guinea
home. Camp. Move along home. Quark is forced to play a game by the Wadi. A newly encountered species and the lives of the crew depend on the outcome. I'm trying to think of some of the words they used on that.
Quark's sweating it out. I love it when Quark has to sweat it out.
Oh, yeah. And he should have... I'm surprised he didn't double down. double the risk, double your reward.
But what was so funny is he made Quark realize that it was just a game. they weren't going to die. We just made you think it was.
Yeah, but we didn't know.
It played on all of Quark's fears. It made him have to play the game and play it well.
Yeah.
It made Quark actually have to be good. And I love the actors that they pulled in for this. For this group of people, they picked the right set of people to make it funny.
Yes,
and this was a funny show. This was a funny show. It was a good laughter one.
All right, and this was an interesting episode, and I'll show you why.
She steps on certain panels which must allow her to go through the field.
If you can see, you'll come with me.
So do it.
Watch this.
Now, we got Dr. Bashir following the foot patterns, but does it work? No! Oh, he missed something.
Everything she did.
Yeah, you didn't do everything.
No, you didn't.
I followed her footsteps. Exactly.
But you didn't say the rhyme.
Now, this is what makes it funny. When you see Ben Sisko...
Alamarain, count to four. Alamarain, then three more. Alamarain, if you can see. Alamarain, you'll come with me. Come on, just see the rhyme.
Come on, Ben. Give it a try.
If you can see Alamarain, you'll come with me.
Alamarain, count to four. Alamarain, then three more. Alamarain, then three more. Alamarain, if you can see. Alamarain, you'll come with me.
Alamarain, you'll come with me.
I'm sorry. I would have been shocked and kicked right back.
Yeah.
For none of that.
Oh man, you could see the embarrassment on Cisco's face. Like, I actually got to do this. And that was Move Along Home. Now, number 11, the Negus. Quark is named as the head of the Ferengi Alliance by Grand Negus Zek. But he is now surrounded by enemies.
The Ferengi Mafia has arrived.
That's interesting there. The Ferengi Mafia. Takes an interest in Quark, but it's not clear why. He tells Quark that he wants to use Quark's bar for a conference.
You're right, son. I want to use your bar.
To which he says, you're going to close down my bar?
That's right, Quark.
Jeez, where'd that come from?
That's right, my boy.
Zek. All right. Who appears
that, that was that I love the man who played that character.
Oh, he was awesome.
Oh, Sean, I think it was who played that.
I'm not sure there, but I liked later on in the series when it turns out Zek was banging Quark's mother. Woo.
Oh, yeah. What's so funny is when we get down to the final episode of all this, it isn't Quark who ends up becoming the Grand Negus.
No! Yeah, I know.
It's Rom that ends up becoming the Grand Negus of the Ferengi Alliance.
I'm surprised Quark...
It's like, and he incorporates unions.
Yes!
he makes all these radical changes that the Ferengi would have never even dreamed of doing in a lifetime.
No, of course not.
I think Zek had too much sex and he didn't know what to do with it, so he screwed up.
That's a problem. Yeah, Quark's mom was affecting him very deeply.
Too deeply.
All right. Now, Vortex is number 12. Odo discovers he may not be the only one of his kind when a visitor from the Gamma Quadrant claims he can contact Odo's people. What a farce. He didn't contact anyone. The only thing he did was use Odo to get him somewhere to rescue his daughter. The guy, of course, who was taken into custody... here we go. I remember
he went to school service crime, but his daughter went back to Vulcan.
Yes. Yes. A shape-shifting stone that may be the clue to Odo's origin. All it was a key. So he used it to get his daughter out of stasis, who was in stasis in a dirty, filthy box. Now, how do you go into stasis in a dirty box?
Who knows?
Me either. But it worked. It worked. Okay, well, let's go on. Because that was another one of those dull ones. But she, you know, the daughter was cute, so it was worth doing. Number 13 was Battle Lines. A spiritual leader of Bajor, Kai Opaka, travels with Sisko on a trip to the Gamma Quadrant, which, you know, should have never gone off the drawing board, but is stranded with him on a world where the dead are resurrected time and time and time again. Oh, man.
This is where she dies, isn't it?
No, yeah, she dies, but then, of course, she comes back to life. But she can't leave that planet now. And here's the thing. He even said to himself, he even said to somebody, the entire Bajoran religious system, all in one package here. So what's he do? Puts her on a runabout and takes her into the wormhole. Wrong! I wouldn't have done that. No way! And then they find this planet. It's a moon, actually. The moon with satellites in orbit. That doesn't look good. Oh, please, Commander, let me go with you. Please, no, let's investigate. Please, no, no, no. I'm taking your ass back to Bajor. But no, they get in there and they find out she dies. And then we got Kira, Major Kira, who has a major breakdown because of it. Remember that?
Yeah, because they lost the Kai. She blames herself for it.
Yeah. Well, she should be blaming the emissary, really. He's the one that put her in this danger. I wouldn't be investigating anything with the entire Bajoran religion system sitting behind me. Never. So, okay, now, let's go on to the... Oh, and so, of course, he's... Ben... Here's the Prime Directive in action. Ben tries to mediate these two warring parties and get them off that planet. We'll take you with us. You'll take us with you? Yeah, all of you. Them too. You know, that guy with the half a face?
Yeah.
I mean, look, dude, I'm trying to help you. Do you want that help or not? Anyway, we got to go on. All right, and we got number 14, the storyteller. O'Brien is recruited to save a Bajoran village from the destruction by a mysterious cloud creature. Wasn't that Dadalroth or something? Dadalroth can't do anything! The cloud is roaring! The people are safe! And, of course, he has the guy whispering in his ear what to say. Tell him I've always hated him. He has always loved you! I've hated every single damn one of them. I wish they would die. The village is safe. The Dalrock doesn't stand a chance. And, of course, the cloud dissipates into itself. The village is safe. And as soon as he says the village is safe, the other guy dies. And so now that leaves him to be the new storyteller. But does it work? No, never does. No. So the guy who ends up trying to kill O'Brien because he wanted to be the new storyteller, he's standing there as O'Brien's destroying the village, and then he jumps up and, wait, no, I'll tell the story. And then he goes on, tells the story. Everything works out great, and O'Brien and Julian get the hell out of there. That's the way that went down. Right?
Yep.
See? I know how to tell a story.
You should be a dungeon master.
There you go. All right. Number 15. Oh. Progress. Progress, huh? Kira has to deal with a stubborn farmer who refuses to leave his home even though it is slated for destruction. That was an awesome episode. Especially when she's trying to get him off of that planet. So she says, okay, fine. If I can't beat him, I'll join him. And she starts building his little pyramid thing. And then in the end, she got the last one on. And all were happy. Until she pulls out her phasers and destroys it. Yeah, and I like the way the guy held on. You know, he was not going anywhere. Remember that?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you can go if you wish. He was a stubborn... He was funny. Everything he said made me laugh. So
it was one of those entertaining DS9 shows.
Yes,
that
it was.
One of those that told a story that you could have only had from a DS9, a stationary space station, and having a ship.
Yes. Okay.
Because the ship would have left them behind. Said screw it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they were going to start tapping the core of that the moon, and he'd have died. So. But he, you know, he thinks he's going to die once he leaves that moon. Number 16.
He just wanted to finish his work. That's all he wanted to do. That's true. It wasn't.
Take it with him. Beam the thing out of there. Anyway, number 16, if wishes were horses. This was a funny one, too. I liked
it. Yeah, this is one of those Rasputin.
Rumpelstiltskin and, Bokai, the famous 23rd century baseball, or 22nd or whatever, but he definitely is in our time that I know of. Deep Space Nine is put in jeopardy when the crew's thoughts manifest themselves and such figures as Rumpelstiltskin appear. Oh, I wanted to be Julian. Remember his manifestation? Dax.
Oh.
She was all over him. I'd have been like, oh, imagination or not, come on, let's go. Julian, don't you dare. Oh, sorry, Dax. I wouldn't have done anything to her. With her, but not to her. Anyway, and then we had Odo's Bok Chok Chartos, I guess some big rooster. That's the best I can to come up with it. Oh, boy. So,
I love the person they picked out to play Rasputin. He played that well.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah.
Buck Bukai was the baseball player who broke Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak.
Now, I'm not very good at baseball, so I'm going to leave this in the show. I'm not going to edit this out, so I will ask this question. Is he a current person, or is he a futuristic person?
He's a futuristic, because the streak, supposedly he broke the streak in 2026.
Oh, so we got time. Really?
Yeah, we got time. We still got, first off, he's got to make it into the majors.
15 years, yeah, that's true.
And then they'll be saying, Star Trek can predict the future.
Yes, they could. All right, number 17, The Forsaken. The Federation Ambassador. Boy. Oh, the Federation Ambassador from Beta Z. By the name of Luoxana Troi visits the station.
Oh, God, that red hair.
Uh-huh, but...
I wonder how much they bribed her to put that damn red hair wig on her.
Well, I wonder how much they bribed her to actually cut her normal hair off to do that. I mean, she looked like a man. But anyway...
Oh, God, that red hair was awful.
Oh, it was. But she develops an affection for Odo. Of course, you know, he... doesn't have develop an affection for her until they get trapped in a turbo lift and he gets to pour himself into her. Then he's like, oh, you were pretty nice after all, lady.
It allowed Odo to actually be Odo.
Here's another thing. Let me ask you this. This is, you know, I think I really could be a nitpicker. And I'm going to be, I've already started my next episode. It's going to be a solo one where I do a review of Star Trek Voyager Season 1. I will be a nitpicker. I am a nitpicker. Because think about this. Odo was in there for how many hours? 11, 15, 20 hours, whatever it was.
Yeah.
They couldn't beam him out of there because the transporters were down. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Well, why couldn't they just go to a runabout that has transporters and transport them out of there using the runabout system?
Who thinks of easy stuff like that but people like you and me?
Well, yeah. I mean, that was crazy. They made the poor guy, literally fall apart in there and demean himself in front of Luoxana because they didn't think, hey, Dax, go to a runabout. Anyway, so that was The Forsaken. And of course, everyone lives, everyone's happy, and hopefully Luoxana will be, and she does come back, doesn't she?
Yeah, later on in the series. She comes back, I think, one more time, I think.
Yes, but of course, Odo has a much deeper appreciation for her then.
I almost thought they were going to be a couple there for a while.
I was actually
going, yeah, Odo and Luoxana Troi, that'll really make the end of his life miserable.
Ooh. Mother.
It ends up Karen Norris gets the changeling, gets the...
And now, coming up on the Lou Trek Show, the next episode.
The Klingons, I guess, found some kind of spears when they were out there.
Yeah.
And I guess the Klingons were battling each other on board their ship.
But it was a mutiny, and of course the mutiny starts on the space station with Kira leading the way.
Right, and all they did was pass it from each other to...
Yeah. Until Odo figures out what the heck is going on and gets them all into a...
In the cargo bay.
Cargo bay, that's it, there you go. And blast them out with the high intensity shriek. Anyway, but that had to hurt, so...
All right. Yeah, to get the gas out of all of them to...
Yes, it would. All right, and that's going to take us to number 19, Duet. A visiting Cardassian may in fact be a notorious war criminal, and Kira is determined to bring him down. See, now I like this one, too, because he was... The way he was talking to her about the Bajoran scum... Wow.
You mean my failure to divulge my true identity? Believe me, Major, I yearned to tell you, but I knew how much more satisfaction you would have if you found out for yourself, and that was my only deception. Maritza was a magnificent file clerk, and I, Galdahiel, I hope you'll not think it immodest of me to say so, but I was a magnificent leader. Oh, you never saw Galatep at its height. For a labor camp, it was the very model of order and efficiency. And why? For that, you have to look to the top, to me! My word, my every glance was law, and the verdict was always the same, guilty.
You're insane.
Oh, no, no, Major, you can't dismiss me that easily. I did what had to be done. My men understood that, and that's why they love me. I would order them to go out and kill Bajoran scum. And they'd do it. They'd murder them, and they'd come back covered in blood. But they felt clean. Now, why did they feel that way, Major? Because they were clean.
You admit your atrocities.
I admit everything. Why not? I was the best at what I did. My accomplishments speak for themselves. Can you say the same? You and that little Shakar resistance cell that you belong to, all you did was annoy Cardassians while I was out exterminating Bajorans.
Make sure you tell that to the tribunal.
Oh, I will.
Then they'll sentence you to death.
Let them. Don't you see it doesn't change anything? Kill me, torture me, it doesn't matter. You've already lost, Major. You can never undo what I've accomplished. The dead will still be dead. What will you do now, Major? Withhold my medicine.
He was awesome, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he was.
Every speech he did like that was just truly awesome. And it made you forget that he was a Oh,
he was
Major.
Evil.
Major. He was the Hitler to the Bajorans.
Yeah, I know.
Jeez. So anyway, that was Duet. And of course, it turns out he wasn't Galdahiel. He was the file clerk, and he took his identity so that he could expose Cardassia for what they really were. You know.
And instead he gets stabbed in the back.
Yes, it's amazing if he'd been able to tell his story. You know, the guy, the drunk in the drunk tank, wakes up, Odo, am I drunk or is that a Cardassian? You know, he was a piece of work. So anyway, but what are you going to do? And that brings us to our final episode for Season 1 of Deep Space Nine, In the Hands of the Prophets. Wow, what a farce. Okay, friction escalates when Vedic Wynn arrives on Deep Space Nine and discovers a school teacher, Keiko O'Brien, who started life as Keiko Ishikawa. Keiko O'Brien is teaching about aliens in the wormhole. That's blasphemy, child. Blasphemy. You can't do that. Of course, the whole reason to get her, that she did all this, was to get Vedic Barile there so she could kill him, because Vedic Barile was going to go on to the next Kai, being the next Kai. And she couldn't handle that. Obviously, backstabbing petty politicalness is the will of the prophets, aren't they?
Yep.
According to her, they are. Which is why she's burning in hell with Gul Dukat. But anyway.
They made a good couple.
They did make a good couple. I did not like it when they actually took Dukat out of the Cardassian makeup and made him human. I can't live...
No, dating Bajoran.
Oh, Bajoran, yes, excuse me, Bajoran. I can't live with the idea of these guys with the big swollen shoulders and the big Cardassian heads that turn into a humanoid like a Bajoran or a human just by getting a hypo spray. That's bull, you know?
That's life in the fast lane.
Oh, yeah. I don't get it. Just like Ensign Lindsay Ballard. Remember her in Voyager? She's the one that died, so they sent her off drifting into space when this other race captures her coffin and brings her back to life as their daughter, Genelia, or something like that. So she's coming back as a different species, and the doctor is able to hit her with a hypo spray, and all of a sudden she turns, looks human again. I have a hard time with that. How does this hypo spray get rid of bone structure? You know?
It's a genetic mutation spray is what it is.
It must be.
What they'll define it as.
But why does the bone return when...
It's like with Klingons. Okay, there's a certain set of Klingons that don't have ridges because of, we discussed this before about
it. Yes, we did. I hated that.
Okay. Some of them had to have surgically added foreheads to make them look Klingon.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Because they had the, because of the situation, because of the genetic tinkering of the Klingon Empire.
Yeah.
That's what you get for making incompetent doctors do work.
All right.
Klingons were noted for their medical expertise.
No, they just, you know, get rid of the corpse in the most efficient manner.
Phaser.
Yeah, really.
Don't have to worry about burying him.
Yeah, you don't have to pay to give him cremated. Just vaporize him, as
I did not like. I think this wasn't this the beginning of the tensions when they had terrorists on board DS9.
Yes, they
trying to purify Bajorans.
Yeah, Bajor for Bajorans. Yeah. Yes, and of course they blew up the school because, you know, because
Keiko was teaching more than what they wanted to.
Yes, Vedic Wynn was a nut job to begin with. And nobody, you know, everybody knew what she was. They even exposed her as the nut job she is, but they still made her Kai. That's interesting. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of Deep Space Nine Season 1. So, all this ever since 1987 when Gene Roddenberry came up with Star Trek The Next Generation, boy, I still remember talking about that first episode. Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Memories.
Memories.
Yes. Like the corn.
God, I was still in the old, the Wrath of Khan uniforms back then, too.
Oh, yeah. 1987. Let me think here. I was 18 years old, man. Yeah, I remember now. I was still in high school. It was in my
87, I was 23.
Oh, man. I remember that.
See, how many years in the Navy? 3 years in the Navy.
Yeah. We'll have to relive those days someday. But anyway, that's going to bring us to the end of this Lou Trek Show episode. Our independent artist music of the day is by Dala, and the song is called Anywhere Under the Moon. Give a listen, and I'll be right back to wrap it up.
And that was Dalla with her song, Anywhere Under the Moon.
And Brian, thank you very much for coming to the show today.
Hey, I'm glad to be a co-host.
Absolutely. But, you know, like I said, I thought we were going to be done. We couldn't get together this week, so I went ahead and started my own thing for the next show. But you and I will be here next Monday, don't worry about it, to put out a show number 20. But I think show number 19, I'm just going to go ahead and pop out on my own sometime this week.
Go right on ahead.
Just like an alien, it's going to come out of me. All right, well then, thank you very much for coming, everybody. And that's going to bring us to the end of the show. So remember, you can go to lewtrekshow.com/Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. We'll let you know when new shows are coming out. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
And kapla.
Kapla.